to protect. Brought to you by Midlands 103, the IBI, and funded by Commission the Man with a television licence fee. Check out ourstoprotect.ie for more information.
On today's Ours to Protect, we focus on Garry, which is formerly known as Fraser Island, which is just off the coast of Australia. It is the largest sand island in the world. The Botula people who inhabited the island lived by three simple rules. One, what is good for the land must come first. Two, do not take or touch anything that does not belong to you. And three, if you have plenty, you must share. Luke Simpson is a tour guide on the island.
Garry is actually a Botula name, which is the indigenous population that used to live here, which translates into paradise. It's also known as Fraser Island, after Captain Fraser, who crashed his boat here a long time ago.
Garry is 123 kilometres in length and 22 kilometres at its widest point. It is home to a number of unique lakes, including Lake Mackenzie, which has sparkling blue water and white sands, while Lake Wabi has a rich green colour, and Lake Burrabeen is a perch lake. It was formed when rainwater filled a natural depression in the sand dune. It took hundreds of thousands of years for the island to form.
It's formed through what's known as the Longshore Drift and the East Australian Current, basically from sands eroding from New South Wales mountains out into the ocean, getting caught in the Longshore Drift and the East Australian Current, and sticking to a rock known as Indian Head, which used to be a volcano head sticking out of the ocean. When the first white settlers came and visited, they actually sailed right past it, thinking it was just a sandy peninsula, thinking nothing good would grow on here. It wasn't until a guy about 30 years after Captain Cook, called Matthew Flinders, navigated all the way around the to discover that it wasn't actually a peninsula but was an island. And he stopped in and discovered a lot of different trees that he thought would be good for making boats, so they started logging it. The island had been used as a sand mining, as for a sand mine for a while, and then in 1992 it got World Heritage listing and is now a UNESCO World Heritage listed national park. So being a national park, it's protected, particularly a World Heritage National Park, is protected. As you can't take anything off the island. There's lots of rangers here. As far as there's only limited places to be able to build on here. And now, it's basically just kept as a national park, so you're not really meant to mess with it anymore. Like I say, it used to be logged, but now we're not allowed to sort of mess with the environment.
The island is home to 47 species of mammals, including the swamp wallaby. There are over 350 types of birds, including the kookaburra and kingfisher, and 79 species of reptiles, including snakes.
Truly is a wonderland made of sand. Just the diversity that we have on the island, it attracts more than 50% of all the bird species around Australia. As we have wetlands, we've got the oceans, we've got many different types of forests. We've got the only rainforest on Earth that grows in sand above an elevation of 200 metres. And yeah, that's mainly due to, when we think of a sand island, I think we're thinking more of a desert sort of sand island. Whereas if you were, like I mentioned today, flying over the island in a plane, you'd see how green it is. And what makes that so special is there's the mycelium network, or a mycorrhizal fungal network, that exists under the sand. And we're finding out that it's through this fungal network that the plants are all able to be connected, and actually we're finding that they're communicating with each other and they're actually sharing nutrients. So it's quite spectacular, the fact that the trees are they're in some sense aware that they're part of something larger than themselves, and they realise that their well-being is directly linked to the well-being of the environment around them. So, if there's a sick tree or something that's nutrient deficient, then they can quite literally share from themselves. And we're finding, now latest science finding that these trees have memory, they can count, they're keeping old trunks alive because of, for whatever reasons, and literally sharing and looking out for it. Other trees and plants in the area. Well, the apex predator on the island is the dingo. Dingoes can be found all around Australia, but the dingo here on the island is specifically significant because it is the purest DNA dingo that we have. Everything goes in mainland, but then they get to breed with other wild dogs, so it sort of waters down their gene pool, whereas here on the island, the dingoes are as pure as they get. We've got lots of snakes, lots of spiders, lots of rodents, swamp wallabies,
lizards.
Lots of lizards, the goannas we call them, big monitor, lace monitors. And it's particularly also really special as far as the marine wildlife as well. The island sticks quite far out on the East Australian coast, so it attracts the humpback whales migrating, particularly lots of sharks breeding around here, dolphins, turtles, dugongs, manta ray, stingrays, an array, lots of pelagic fish. It's what the indigenous actually used to live off a lot. They were quite a big, strong race because of the amount of protein they'd get out of the ocean, mainly surviving off seafood and shellfish hidden in the land.
As we took a stroll through the subtropical rainforest, we encountered one of the 19 types of snakes that call the island home.
These are carpet python. These are the most common snakes we have out here.
Very quiet, because you can wake him up.
I can wake him up, but these guys don't strike, or they do strike. They'll normally make an S-bend with their neck, and then they can lunge out, normally eating rats and rodents and things like that, but non-venomous. These are boa constrictors, so they will actually grab their prey, squeeze them to death, and then swallow them whole.
How long would you say this one?
This guy, maybe like 6 foot long.
Wow.
Maybe as tall as us. Maybe a little bit less.
How tall do they get?
They get like 20, 30 foot. They're huge. They can be huge. Like the length of a road. And he's like a medium average size one.
In the midst of the rainforest, the Wongulla Creek was a special place for the Botula women.
And this is where the Botula women would come to give birth. There's a little creek down there. The reason they picked this is it's a little valley and it's a subtropical rainforest. So it's protected from fires, and there's also this really beautiful creek running through there. So they had fresh drinking water, and they actually gave birth in the water, which would give it, because it's that cool groundwater, gave a little bit of pain relief in the childbirth process. So the pregnant women would come here, no dudes allowed up here. And this creek is particularly special because, like creeks and rivers, they normally, with gravity, run down from high areas into the ocean, whereas this is what's known as a window creek, very rare.
The island is also home to some of the oldest ferns known to man.
You see these ferns here, guys, these giant ferns. These are what's known as the king fern. It's the rarest fern on earth, only exists in 5 creeks anywhere now. And these are dated to be about 2,000 years old. Got like a little bulb and a pump that pumps up through the branches.
Which ones?
These king ferns. They're unchanged in their evolution in 300 million years.
Yeah, they were around in the dinosaurs.
They were around before the dinosaurs. Yeah. One of the original plants.
Plants
started as, like, you can see, like, the bacteria or the algae there. And then algae, then it started single stem, and then ferns that started rolling out. But, yeah, nearly 2,000 years old, or over 2,000 years old then.
Jamie moved from Scotland to Garry 5 months ago to manage the eco-retreat on the island, which welcomes 90 visitors every week.
Pretty much our main goal is to achieve a clean island and just look after the world that we live in, especially the island. Throughout the year, we hold specific tours that are beach cleanups, and we have collected, in our last one, we collected over 700 kilos of rubbish in 10 hours just on the beach alone. Anything from plastic to tyres to timber, stuff that washes up and stuff that unfortunately does get littered. We also are the only company on the island that takes all of our recyclable waste back off of the island with us, whether it's a 10 cent deposit scheme, mixed recycling, cardboard, anything that we can recycle, we make sure that we do.
The native people use the island's resources to be self-sufficient.
the Butchla, they live off of, or they lived off of the island for up to 50,000 years, probably even more. The Butchla people have been habitat in this island, and anything from medicines, from plants, to obviously the animals that were once feral on the island, and fish and everything like that, they use that a lot, but not so much now, whether that's probably to do with a lot of tourism. A lot of the animals are a lot more scarcely populated, as well as there's no need for that, so people don't go looking for food in that sense, apart from the fishing, which is obviously a massive fishing hotspot for people still.
Gary means paradise, and Jamie says it literally lives up to its name.
And it literally is paradise. Yeah, we get some bad weather, but majority of the time it is beautiful weather. Every time I'm driving up that beach, I need to pinch myself and be like, how am I here? Like, what have I done to deserve to have such a privilege to work on the world's largest sand island and something so spectacular? So the scenery and the places to see and the history and the culture that this place holds is just insane.
To find out more about the world's largest sand island, see ourstoprotect.ie, or there's a fact sheet on midlands103.com.
Ours to Protect, brought to you by Midlands 103, the IBI, and funded by Commission the Man with a television licence fee. Check out ourstoprotect.ie for more information.